such a great crowd. Thanks, everybody, for coming this morning. This Frameworks is especially exciting for me because I get to wear my two hats that I have in my day job, which is communications for both BioCrossroads and for the Central Indiana Corporate Partnership. So it's really exciting that we've got two sister organizations, Ascend Indiana and BioCrossroads, working together this morning to bring you a phenomenal program. And what's cool is actually this is the second time in just a week that we've done that. Last week was BioCrossroads' big Indiana Life Sciences Summit where we had about 330 people over the course of 2 days. And Ascend was there to get a good feel for the life sciences industry and meet some people and that kind of thing. So we really love that we're doing some sort of cross-promotional work together to really bring some great products and services to our local community. So anyway, we have, like I said, a great presentation this morning. We have fantastic speakers on a panel to tell you what's being done in the life sciences community and healthcare communities to really fill that talent pipeline gap. 2 years ago, CICP started their newest initiative, which at the time was called the Central Indiana Workforce Development Initiative, kind of like the Central Indiana Life Sciences Initiative, which is what BioCrossroads' name was way back when. Actually, I think it kicked off about October as well, right, Jason? October, November of 2016. And it was the brainchild of two of our speakers this morning in an effort to fill this talent gap that affects a lot of our employers, but by using very strategic and process-oriented ways to get to solutions. And this team has made tremendous progress over those 24 months or so. And so I'm really excited today to introduce Jason Cloth, who's the president and CEO of Ascend Indiana, who's going to share some insight as to what they're doing and how they're working in the life sciences and healthcare communities. So welcome, Jason.
Well, thank you. It's so great to be here. I want to thank President Danko for the opportunity to use such a beautiful facility. I have to say, when we were going through our branding process, I really struggled with, you know, should we say the Central Indiana Workforce Development Initiative, or CIWDI, or go with something like Ascend? And I thought Ascend had a little bit more of an aspirational tone to it. But a little bit of background context before I jump in here. When I, in a prior life, served as deputy mayor for the city of Indianapolis, we were working on a strategic plan that was grounded in the budget. And we as a city and as a community had a structural deficit that was the equivalent of 50,000 people making $50,000 a year living and working in Marion County. And around that time, we had a software company come and say, we're interested in bringing 400 jobs to your community. We don't need a tax abatement or a big tax incentive. You already have a strong business climate. What we need is 400 workers with this set of knowledge and skill. And so for us, that was a huge potential boon for the city. It would have been had a big impact on that overall number, impacting the structural deficit. So we called some of our higher education institutions, we looked across the community and across the state, and we really couldn't make the commitment to them that we could deliver those 400 workers. And so here we had a business offering us a solution that would have been an enabler to fill our potholes, to build sidewalks, to pay for our schools. And so that just seemed crazy to me, and that's really what led to the genesis of Ascend. And Ascend would only be possible in the context of an organization like the Central Indiana Corporate Partnership that brings business, higher education, and philanthropy together in such a powerful way. And so I'm so grateful to be a part of the CICP team and family. But we exist to solve a simple and complex problem at the same time. The gap between open jobs and available talent in our community continues to widen, so it's forecasted in the coming years that millions of Indiana jobs will go unfilled. And this is due largely to demographic shifts, people retiring, as well as a mismatch of the supply of talent we're producing relative to the demand within the labor market. But when we built Ascend, we had the opportunity to do product market research. We met with job seekers, career service offices, in community colleges and four-year institutions, as well as the talent acquisition teams and HR teams within companies. And through that process, we met people like Mariah, who's based on a real person, graduate of Michigan, 3.9 GPA, technically proficient in everything you would expect of a Michigan grad. But when we met her, she was underemployed. She'd applied to 22 different jobs through Monster, Career Builder, Indeed, and was working at part-time at Godiva when we actually ended up extending an offer to her and hiring her on our team at Ascend. Then meet Acme. This is based on a real company, full transparency. It's not Cummins. The building just looks really good in the PowerPoint deck. The other chief talent officers on our board, and I've gotten approval to use this image. But it's based on a real company, 800 employees, competitive salaries and benefits. At any given time, this company will have hundreds of open jobs within the business. And so you would think in that labor market that Mariah would make her way to Acme, but unfortunately they're missing one another. And so the question is, well, why is that happening? And our view is that there are a lot of smaller issues that create asymmetry of information in the labor market, misguided job postings. So we work with companies where we see these very technical, legal job descriptions that are hard for the job seeker to interpret. Application overload through job boards and overload for hiring managers. The timing of when people complete certificates or degrees is misaligned with when employers need talent. Vagueness in the labor market. Most Indiana college students can name fewer than five Indiana employers. And the employers that they can name are typically the large employers or consumer-facing brands. There are misperceptions about certain types of industries, particularly in advanced manufacturing, and then burdensome processes. But the net effect of this is employers can't find talent, talent can't find jobs. And this happens a lot in our community. And then in some instances, we just don't produce enough talent with the knowledge and skill required to meet the demand in the labor market. And so that's really where we come in at Ascend. We aim to bridge the connectivity gap between employers and talent in Indiana, and we do that through two business solutions, the Ascend Network and Ascend Services. What's important is the network informs the work that we do on the services side of our shop. And so what is the network? It is a tech-enabled recruitment platform. And I say tech-enabled because while we've built a software platform that allows us to profile companies, teams, and jobs, and then we break those jobs down into character traits, technical skill, and work style, and so far we have 125 employers that have signed up in the pilot year. And then on the supply side, we partner with higher education institutions like Butler, like the University of Indianapolis, to meet with students. We've pre-qualified nearly 25,000 students at this point. Our recruiters meet with those individuals. We invite them to build profiles, and we capture character traits, technical skill, and work style, and then we use an algorithm to match candidates to jobs. So what does that look like? In honor of Jack's presence today, we've profiled Roche. But as you can see, the vision, mission, history of the company, multiple images of the business, as well as resources that Roche wants to highlight. Below this, you would see apartment complexes, restaurants, ways that a student could engage in the community. We're trying to make visible to that student in Bloomington or West Lafayette or Indianapolis what it would look like to live and work at Roche. Well, hopefully not live there, but work there. And then we break that information down by team because we realize in enterprise-level companies, while there's one culture, there is micro-cultures within those cultures. Oh, there we go. Lag time. So this is a sample job seeker profile. So Mariah has met with one of our recruiters. We've invited her into the network. What you'll see is the center looks an awful lot like a LinkedIn profile, but off to the left is where our recruiters are capturing information about character traits, technical skills, like do you know Java, do you know Excel, and work style. And then off to the right there, you can see, perhaps. uh, off to the right here, you can see the strength of that match against that job, and a talent acquisition team can invite them to apply for a role. And so the whole idea behind the network is conversion rates. If we send an employer 10 candidates, our hope is that they'll interview 6, hire 4. So, for instance, recently Lilly had 25 clinical trial specialist roles open. We sent them 7 candidates. They hired 4, or they interviewed 4, and they hired 3. That far outperforms a traditional job board. But that enables us to map out the demand side and the supply side of what's occurring in the labor market, and it informs where we go to build costly new pipelines of talent. So when there's a large employer with a recurring need, typically north of 30 hires, or there's a group of employers that have a commonality of need, we will act as an intermediary between them and higher education institutions to build costly new pipelines of talent. And so to do that, we work alongside employers in higher ed through a methodology. It begins with a discovery where we say to the employer, what's the current state of your workforce? What's the desired future state? What's causing the misalignment between those things? And how can we solve it, solve that problem, and what's the financial business case for you to do that? We then enter into a contract with the employer. They tell us what they're looking for in an education partner. So in the instance of Roche, they said we want a combination of molecular biology, mechanical engineering, these changes to curriculum, multiple work and learn experiences. We quantify that and then go out and look at all the higher education institutions in our community. Roche chooses a partner. We then enter into an agreement to build a program. We then manage the process of how will we market, recruit, select, matriculate, what will people learn, who will teach them, how much will it cost, as an intermediary between those two parties, and then we'll launch and support the ongoing improvement of the program. And the whole idea here is around increased time to productivity for new employees, improved retention, improved satisfaction. And we now have multiple examples where we're seeing this play out to the benefit of job seekers, higher education institutions, and employers. And so with that, I want to bring up my colleague, Stephanie Bothan. She is the Vice President of Services at Ascend. She leads our consulting function. She's also the co-founder of Ascend. I cannot express enough gratitude to her. We would not be here without her. She is also someone that I met very early in her career. When she graduated from the Kelly School of Business at the top of her class, she decided to defer an offer to Deloitte and their strategy and operations consulting function and teach through Teach for America on the west side of Indianapolis, where she was named Teacher of the Year. She then went on to her commitment at Deloitte for a few years before I called her in the parking lot of a Buffalo Wild Wings and said, hey, what do you think about coming back and working at the city? You'll make half as much money, and it'll be grueling hours. And she said, that sounds great. So it's a pleasure to bring Stephanie up to stage.
When Jason tells that story, I'm not sure that it shows the level of processing power that I actually have at times. But I'm just really grateful to be here today to talk with you a little bit more about some of the work that I'm really privileged to do. So before we jump in with our panel, we thought we'd just provide a little bit of context around the concept of talent pipelines and what we mean by that when we say a talent pipeline. As Jason mentioned, Indiana, like the nation, faces a shortage of skilled talent. To combat this, we must ensure that students are studying in relevant fields and then that are connecting with the careers that are in high demand in our economy. One hypothesis that we have is that closer relationships and engagement between employers and higher education will yield that quality, work-ready pipeline of talent. And it was a hypothesis, but I think you'll hear from our panel today that it's coming to fruition and the results are incredible. So what we do at Ascend is we partner with employers in higher education to build educational training programs that prepare the talent that they have to come through the system and be ready to work. We call these programs talent pipelines. The way we design them is to be a win-win-win. So we look at the student benefit, the benefit to higher education, and the benefit to the company. Employers are working to address their talent shortages while decreasing costs. Higher education gets access to adjunct faculty, facilities, exposure to new students who may not have considered that pathway before. And then ultimately, students benefit through scholarship dollars work-based and training experiences, and then quality job opportunities that come from these programs. So these partnerships are strengthening our economy. They're aligning the supply of talent to demand for specific roles, and typically in areas where we currently have shortages. So that is compounding that effect. So for our panel today, we're going to take an in-depth look at two of our talent pipelines that we've built. The first is a talent pipeline to prepare bachelor's-educated nurses with Community Health Network in partnership with the University of Indianapolis. The second is a pipeline of technicians for Roche Diagnostics, also in partnership with the University of Indianapolis. So I'm going to provide a quick introduction about each of the talent pipelines. Then I'll invite our panelists up to come talk a little bit more about the specific ins and outs of their program. And then finally, we'll open it up to you guys to ask some questions around these specific programs. So let's start with a quick overview. Starting out with our first partnership, or the Nursing Academy. This program came about because, as many of you know, Indiana faces a critical shortage of nurses to provide patient care, and that demand is only growing. So Ascend partnered with Community Health Network and the University of Indianapolis to support them in building out the academy model. This academy has created tremendous benefit. Students receive scholarship dollars, training, and ultimately a nursing job opportunity at Community. They also get to build relationships with the staff on their unit so that they are much more comfortable when they join, when they go to work there full time. Community is getting a dedicated, highly trained pipeline while decreasing their orientation time and cost and increasing their retention rates. And then UND is getting a new stream of non-traditional students for the program. They have access to adjunct faculty and facilities that support the ability to grow their nursing program. This talent pipeline launched in 2016 and is already showing just incredible results. 72 students have been accepted into the program, 40 have successfully completed to date, and Community has invested up to $10,000 in scholarships per program. But the ROI for them has been high because Nursing Academy graduates exit orientation on average 2 weeks earlier than their counterparts, and they're two times more likely to remain employed through their first year than other hires. This saves Community thousands of dollars on recruitment, training, and retention, while also those students are just much more productive and able to work when they get to Community. This is not to mention the effect that it has on students themselves. So on this slide, you can see a student, Ashton. This is an actual graduate of the graduating from the Nursing Academy, but it's a testimony that she gave to how this has impacted her life. So she graduated the Nursing Academy in 2018, and she's currently preparing for her licensing exam. However, in the meantime, she already has the safety of knowing she has a job, her dream job in labor and delivery at Community Health South Maternity, where she did her clinical rotations, and she feels ready to make an impact when she first starts. So Brian's going to talk a little bit more about this program in just a minute. Our second program is the Roche Academy. That program actually just launched in August of this year. So a little bit of context on this project. So Roche needed to continue to grow its base of biomedical equipment technicians, given retirements and the growing need from customers. So they decided to shift their strategy around hiring to an early in career strategy to fill these roles. So Ascend got the opportunity to partner with Roche and the University of Indianapolis to build the academy to prepare students with a hybrid, as Jason mentioned, of biology, chemistry, and clinical lab sciences to prepare students to fill these roles. These students also receive scholarship dollars, a paid internship, mentorship support throughout their education, and then ultimately, if they meet all the requirements, a job offer at Roche after they graduate. Roche is investing nearly $17,000 per student, and they'll receive an influx of those 20 to 25 technicians to join their team each year. They've already experienced tremendous interest from students based on that launch event that we had. We had approximately 75 students, faculty, and administration attend the kickoff, and the first cohort is currently being selected. I think it's being selected this month, and those students will start the program in the spring of next year. So it can't be underscored enough how these talent pipelines are serving to put students on a path to a desirable, in-demand career and to have them equipped with the skills that they need to be successful within that career. So as we started doing these things, we started to get tremendous interest from a variety of other partners that are now interested in thinking about how they can also fill some of the talent challenges or fill some of the roles that they have open. So we're doing a suite of other projects at the moment. So these are just the outcomes that we've seen to date are a great signal and indicator that doing this work, it matters and that it's leading to a ton of success for a variety of stakeholders. And so with us today, we're lucky to have the innovative thinkers who made this possible. There are full bios for each of our panelists in your program, so I'm just going to do a quick intro. First, we have Brian Mills. Brian's been the president and chief executive officer of Community Health Network since 2009, and he also serves as the vice chair for the Central Indiana Corporate Partnership Board of Directors. We also have Jack Phillips. Jack's the president and CEO of Roche Diagnostics and head of North America region for Roche Diagnostics. He's also the chair of the Central Indiana Corporate Partnership Board of Directors. And then we also have Dr. Robert Manuel. President Manuel has been the president of the University of Indianapolis since 2012, and he also serves on our board of directors for Ascend. So at this time, I'd like to invite our panelists to come join me on the stage.
Sit in the middle, Rob, or wherever.
You can be the rose. I'll be the thorn.
You're the conduit.
You guys all coordinated your suits today. I didn't, you know, get the memo that we were doing the blue suits, but
Jack told us what to wear. Yeah.
Jack told you. I love it.
It's not true.
Perfect. So just wanted to start off and congratulate all of you on the success that you've already seen through the talent pipelines and just for the opportunity for Ascend to get to work alongside you and your teams to do this exciting work. We're just really grateful that you are taking the time today to share more about this with the broader audience. So let's go ahead and kick off the questions for the panel. So Jack and Brian, I'd like to start with you. Could each of you talk a little bit more about the talent needs that community and Roche were facing, and why was it critical to find this sort of sustainable solution for developing talent?
Okay, I'll go.
You want to go? You want me to go?
I mean, this goes back a few years ago, so you know, this really is the end result of getting Ascend involved. I mean, without Ascend doing this, I mean, Jason, it wouldn't have happened. Because we have been studying a number of things. I've been a community a long time, but I did not come up through the hospital administration. I've never run a hospital. I don't have an MHA, and so I don't know a whole lot about that side of our business. But I knew we had all these nurses. I said, tell me, we need nurses. So we started going through all this data about 5 years ago, and you know, I did not realize a number of things. One, we had about 200 open jobs, and that was pretty consistent. Secondarily, we had a limit on the number of new hires. I said, well, why is that? Well, because of the increased orientation time and the fact that there's all these things that we need to skill nurses up when they hit our doors, not to mention the fact there are parts of our organization that they get zero training in during their education, or they did. It's changed now with Rob and his team. And so you start walking through and say, okay, what can we do to match this? And what we really said is that we've got to come up with a way that we can help connect with those people that are training nurses to make sure that they're wonderful candidates for us, and we don't want to surprise them and vice versa. I mean, this should be a marriage here. And as one of the screenshots up there talked about, and we also think we can do it in less than 4 years. What's magical about 4 years? So you start having these conversations, and we tried it on our own and unsuccessfully. And then I'll be glad to get into this later as well. And then you got the philanthropic piece of it involved. And next thing you know, you had all these pieces that came together to produce a really cool way to introduce people into a work life and understand that there's the chance of success is really high.
So it's funny. I've never heard that, actually. I've never heard the case for change from you on this. And it's funny, as I listen to it, the similarities of different job, different problem, but it's really kind of the same for me at Roche. So when I think back on our journey here with Ascend, I was thinking, you know, I basically had this insane moment, insanity moment in a meeting where every month I do a headcount review. And I do it with my CFO, Wayne Burris, and my head of HR. We sit down for an hour and we look at our headcount and, you know, look at our needs, look at our open positions, look at the request in general. And the insane moment was when we again, for the, you know, month after month, you know, we continue to do the same thing. We're looking at this gap that we have in our support organization. The biomedical equipment technicians, which Again, big long word, won't get into explaining what that is, but think about from a need standpoint for Roche, it's like Brian in his organization, a community, like if he doesn't have nurses, he's in trouble, right? I mean, you have to have nurses. We have to have these individuals. So this insane moment was in this meeting. It was, you know, one of the months, and I'm like, you know, we are continuing, we have 50 open heads continually, rolling open heads in this area, and we continue to do the same thing over and over again. How do we go about reaching out to attract this talent? How do we interview the talent? How do we hire the talent? How do we train the talent? So like Brian said, in addition to that problem, we also had the new hires that we brought on board, but it was going to be like, you know, well, it's a year before they get up to speed because of all the technical training and all that. And so at the same time, around the same month, I was happened to be, it was a CICP board meeting, and Jason was presenting on this big idea around Ascend. And it was right after that insane moment, I'm like, we're on a hamster wheel here. We have to do something different. I'm not sure what we're going to do, but we've got to change the way we go about filling this void in talent. And I heard Jason speak, and I'm like, we knew each other, but I was like, hey, we need to talk. I said, I've got an idea. You need to come and see me. And that's the way the journey started. The case for change for us was quite compelling. I mean, we have 15% of our employee base in this area is retiring in the next 5 years. Our business is growing 2x the market. The complexity of what we sell and install and support is going off the chart. And so the talent that we're even attracting is really, it's just that they need to know more. They need to be better prepared. So that's when we said, hey, we're all in. Let's think about this. And we put the plan together.
That's really helpful. I really like the idea, too, of thinking of it like a marriage and all the work that needs to go in terms of, you know, preparing for that and then continuing to take care of that. That's really a lot of the way that our models work. So moving over to President Manuel. So we know that UND is producing, you know, a number of qualified graduates every year across a variety of different areas. So why was it beneficial and really attractive for the university to partner with industry on these types of projects?
So if you open any newspaper anywhere, you're going to see the pressure to commodify higher education. That is, to make it cheaper, quicker, faster, get out in 2 years and be done. And about 10, 15 years ago, that was the for-profit model and the models that came through, and it was, you know, well received. And every morning at 2 o'clock when I get up and can't sleep, and I see that stupid commercial of this kid getting out of bed in her pajamas saying, I can finish my degree at 2 o'clock in the morning on my own time and be done quickly. I realize that's the death knell for higher education, in that if we continue to allow ourselves to be commodified, we're going to be that bubble that does burst that everybody's saying exists. But the truth is, I don't think we're in a bubble. I think we're in a moment of a crisis over design. So how do you take what we know is valuable in an education, and how do you take what the industry is saying they need and create educational experiences that fit that? If we commodified ourselves, we would just be saying, yes, tell me what you need for that moment, and you would get an employee who would fit the job, and then 2 years later, when your technology changes, you wouldn't have that. And so the trust that exists between a corporation and a higher ed institution, and this happens at Butler, it happens at UND. I'm not just saying that because Jim Danko is in the room. I'm saying it because Butler provides the same kind of attachment, is required to be a relevant institution of higher education today. And what I like most about this relationship is that we weren't commanded to change our curriculum. We weren't commanded to become something very in a direct contact. We were respected as an institution that knows how to create people who think and reason, are logical and can write and communicate, and with the information coming from the two industries here, could then accelerate the process of transitioning from college to career. And that is the holy grail for higher education, is making sure that students are getting out and getting employed. And then for us and many others, it's making sure that they are
good citizens and that they have longevity in the field they choose to go into.
That's great. So I think, Brian and Jack, you were talking a little bit about this, sort of the demand that you had for these types of roles and some of the challenges that you faced. But what led you to take the leap to try something really different? This was a different way of thinking, a different process than maybe what you had gone through before. Or I had heard, you know, Brian, you said it had failed before. So just talk a little bit about, you know, what led you to say, you know what, we're going to take a risk on this. We're going to take the time and take step back and really plan this out and do it differently.
Well, it is interesting, the similarities between what Jack and us were, not really in the same industry, but we're generally in the same space. But, I mean, a little bit of backdrop as well, back to this insanity moment, which I have every Monday morning, because I go to new employee orientation to welcome people to our organization every single Monday morning, 52 weeks a year. And I've done that for years, mm-hmm. to try to make sure they understand who we are, what we expect, how we treat people, you know, talk about our culture and our brand, and et cetera. And virtually every Monday morning, I would walk out and say, this is not going to work. I mean, this only a nut would continue to do this and not make some change. So you start getting information. And our biggest chunk of is nurses. I mean, we employ about 16,000 people in central Indiana, and about 5,000 of them are nurses. And it's core to what we do. So that's where we said, okay, where do we start here? And, you know, and my premise was the nurse doesn't want to show up not ready. The school who produced the nurse doesn't want that. We've got to talk. Why can't we get in a room and start problem solving? And I believe in strategic partnerships. I mean, we have a plethora of partnerships. And I believe that those partnerships, that 1+1 or 1+1 equals a lot more than 2 or 3 or whatever the numbers are there. You can do all these other things because you get this open dialogue and thinking together. When it's all said and done and you want to produce a highest quality individual and you want to make that person the best they can be, and then you put them in an environment where they get education, but they also build relationships. Well, that to me is glue. And they're going to tell other people, their parents. I mean, the number of parents who come to me raving, I don't know these people. I'm standing somewhere and somebody's on a V-line. I'm thinking, okay, it's either an upset patient or maybe it's just magical. It's a blessed feeling to know that you're doing something that somebody can tell you've really tried to personalize something for their kid or for themselves or for what we're trying to do. And these people come into our organization and they stay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great story. I mean, your question, I mean, for me, I kind of mentioned it already. I mean, how did we get to this? Why did we make the leap, right? And honestly, it was that moment where we continued, it hit me like we're doing the same thing over and over again, and we're expecting a different result. And then, you know, all my employees know when I start rubbing my forehead like this, you know, wow, something's going to happen, right? And so I started rubbing my forehead, but we took a step back and said, let's dissect the problem. Okay, what is the problem? And when we really took a step back and said, let's just look at this in total, okay, we had customers, okay, where we are not meeting their needs. They are not happy because we don't have field service engineers that are showing up on time, that are competent. We have employees that are exhausted. We have employees that are leaving, okay, because they are working 80 hours a week, incredible overtime, because we need them to do that. So they're not fulfilled. Mm-hmm. We started looking at the market. Our innovation is amazing. The complexity, though, is amazing. The need to think about things differently and be system thinkers versus just about solving one problem. And I'm sure nursing, again, is no different than this. I mean, it is no longer about, hey, we need you to fix this one piece of equipment. No, we need you to think broadly about system and IT and biology. And actually, we need you to be able to be a more effective communicator with customers and to explain those things. So this was all the strategy work before I said, okay, I'm going to quit rubbing my head, but we are going to do something different. And so we really kind of took our time to map out all the opportunities and what we are trying to accomplish. And you know, again, and you know, another one is just, you know, we are in a workforce now that must be agile. I mean, if you are not agile, if you are not building a workforce of agile thinkers, of growth-minded thinkers, okay, you're dead. And so that's the other key component, is that we're starting to instill that kind of mindset early on in their college schooling. And then, again, that training is going to continue through Roche. They're going to continue to learn through Roche. But we have to get that kind of agile mindset baked in early.
Yeah, and one of the things that really excited me about the work with Jack and with Roche is that as they were going through that analysis, they were also thinking about, you know, we have all these retirees and we have some of these challenges where we're hiring for certain profiles of people. What if we rethink that profile? What if we create an early in career slot within this division where we can create, you know, we can work with people to bring them in early, you know, and then sort of mentor them and give them a long-term pathway to become that subject matter expert. And so that was one thing that I think was really exciting too about that specific mm-hmm. project. Did you want to add anything before I move on?
Oh, that was terrific.
Yeah, good. Perfect. So another question for the panel. So as you've gone through these processes, now Rob a couple of times, and we've been working with community actually now on a couple of different projects as well, what were some of the key success factors that you've identified as you went through the process of building the program? And those success factors can be in partnering, in the partnership itself, in looking at your own business, or in working with early and career students as well.
So maybe I'll start this time.
Perfect.
First of all, I don't want to bust Jason or Stephanie's bubble here, but he knows that we have not been successful yet. Right. So we're not as far along as Brian is, graduating students and that wonderful story of the students. So we're not there yet, just because we're not there yet. We're not there. So success for me, when we'll crack a bottle of champagne and celebrate, is when we get those first students and we get them employed in a position, in a territory, and we're off and running. But back to your question, like and I've done many of these in my career that have failed. So, you know, not like workforce specifically, but big ideas. Yeah. Let's call them big ideas. And this is truly a big idea. We've never done anything this unique from a work. I have never done anything this unique from a workforce deployment. A couple of things that are on my mind that we've been doing that will lead to success is one, you've got to commit the resource. I mean, this can't be like, the guy that's running the support organization for me that has 1,000 employees and a lot of problems to deal with every day, I can't say, hey, Jim, you go ahead and do this and manage this. So dedicated resources, and we did that from the start. We have dedicated resources at Roche and at Ascend and then at UIndy. Second thing related to that is, you know, pick your partners and team. So we've got, you know, with Ascend, we didn't do any of the selection relative to campus selection. We let Ascend do all that work and really find out, you know, what universities are actually interested, which ones are capable, you know, et cetera. That has been key. And then as we move this along, you know, I really think about back to agility. I think we have to be agile about the curriculum and program that we develop. We've got to fail fast. We've got to be nimble enough to say, like, for example, in our program, we don't have a big track on technology and IT yet. I believe we will. I'm talking to my team about that because that's so important. I mean, the convergence of life science and technology is happening. We have added, like, an instrumentation class within biology at UIndy, which is much needed. So that's the nimble piece. For me, the other one is I've been telling my team, it's like, okay, so we've set up this great program that looks wonderful and it's perfect, right? You know what? It's perfect until no students decide to take that track. So we've got to be actually promoting this program. And for me, it starts with, you know, it can't be students don't want to just, they don't want a job. I mean, they want a company. They want a family. So for me, it's very much about, I've talked to the team, it's like, you've got to be talking to them about why do they want to join Roche? And it's really about doing now what patients need next. It's really about inpatient, making an impact in the lives of people. It's about changing the practice of medicine. And it also is a career opportunities to go global, mm-hmm. to go into leadership, to go into marketing. This is just the start. And so painting that vision mm-hmm. on campus at UIndy, I think, is maybe where we're at now, is maybe the last key to success here, is to get the students enrolled.
And there will be at least 10 to 15 students that have applied, because I've seen that information for Jack's program. So hopefully we'll have zero, but yeah. we'll see how quickly that program can scale. Yeah. But, yeah, that's perfect.
To me, so we have, if you just reduce it down, we have three major partners in here. We've got to make sure, whether it's the university or whether it's the employer or whether it's the student, everybody's winning. And everybody wins along the same plane. Because if not, it doesn't sustain. So that's one. The second thing that's big for me, and this is big for me in every single strategic partnership we put together, it's got to survive my legacy. And it's got to survive the legacy of everybody else involved. So if Rob was not there, you know, in 6 months, or I'm not where I am, or whatever, so many of these things just collapse because that was the will of the person in charge. Well, that's nonsense. So I mean, that's not a real partnership.
Do you know something?
So, well, I wouldn't go to announce it publicly.
I thought he was talking about me.
So, but I think that's something that's a missing piece, because we've had those in other things, and it really is keeping that information in front of everybody. So I'll be selfish at this point in time. I'm going to talk about why it's important as an employer. Mm-hmm. So, first of all, I told everybody, just because we said we're going to do this, we have no idea what we're doing. We've never done it. You've got to tell me when this isn't working. Mm-hmm. So, like, an easy one there was we first said this is going to be limited to children of employees. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I said that. I just did. Well, early on, all of a sudden you get people saying, hey, what about my nephew? Or about, and you find out that made no sense at all. So all of a sudden the pool got expanded. Well, that was a good thing. So, but that's an example of just saying, you know, let's make sure these are safe conversations. We're trying to get this thing done. The student's got to be a good student. So far, the graduates we've had, they've scored about as high as you can get, higher than any average, higher than a P75, higher on their aptitude scores, on their nursing exams. And so, okay, we're producing a good product. Then the other thing is we've got to get our employees in here. This can't just be, you know, that little yum-yuck who comes up with these great, crazy ideas, all of a sudden putting more burden on me. And we've had to do this with our medical school partnerships as well, to embrace the people that say, we want you to be a part of this. This is why it's good for you. So how do you get your employees involved? How do you get your management involved? This is a win-win, everybody wins type of thing. Well, what happens then? Is that employee, that student, they're feeling the love of the organization. They understand that we're trying to help you be successful in what you want to do. And then there's also some places in there that somebody says, like the example was a person being labor and delivery. Then put him or her up there for a while and let them do more. I mean, let's figure out how to do this. So it is trying to make sure, and that data, we keep tracking that data. Because it's so easy to get caught up on it all. And then finally, what's happening year one, what's happening year two, what's happening year three. And so we've now had three years of graduations. And the amazing thing is they stay.
That's great.
Now I will say, not every single student has stayed. And we believe that was poor selection. And now if you get, so in the first year we're trying to fill a pool, and we really hadn't thought through this very well. So you've got to take things that you see didn't hit your goal, and you got to study it. You can't say, oh, that was a bad person. No, it wasn't. We put this model in place. We have to understand the model. We'll continue to perfect the model. And now we're spreading it to other disciplines that we have, right? And one of them we've already started, and we've got more coming.
I think one of the things that you're highlighting, Brian, are the governance structure behind these programs. So making sure that you not only have sort of the top-level leadership, but you have the day-to-day hiring managers and others who are going to interact with and train these students involved not only in the build of the program, but then in the ongoing management, execution, tracking. You want those people giving you the feedback around what's happening with students so that there's a way to continue to course correct if necessary. Yeah. So that's another key success factor.
The other thing you said that was really, I think, important is transporting this program. Once you get it nailed, it's, if I heard you right, you know, from, in your case, from nursing to something else. Mm-hmm. And that's the other thing that I'm just really excited about. It's like, once we perfect this kind of model, okay, then there is no reason why we can't take this model to, hey, let's focus on business at Butler and sales, you know, or sales professionals or marketing professionals or you know, whatever that might, engineers, whatever that might be, PhDs. And but you have to nail the model. You know, you've got to get the model humming. And the last thing you said too is so right on, is about the metrics, is like that you're always looking at, you know, hey, what's the scorecard? How are we doing here?
And then, President Daniel, do you want to talk a little bit about those key success factors from a university perspective as part of the partnership?
Sure. So for us, we've reinvented ourselves three times in our career. One, we started out like most institutions of higher ed, which was about learning. So just for its sake, you wanted to go to learn, to become a citizen, and that was good enough. Then we started these relationships between individuals at corporations. So our faculty were creating research opportunities with other employees. And now we're entering into this phase of institution-to-institution relationship. And that fundamentally shakes differently the way a higher education institution operates than it did when either the other two moments were at hand. So the fear that we all have in higher ed is that we're going to get dictated to by the evil corporations about what we have to produce in order to have people that are employed. And what's working remarkably well here is that I think there's a respect for the fact that education is much broader than, and the success points that you're talking about are more hinged to the fact that people have to be able to think and read and write and do those liberal artsy things that aren't as popular anymore. So the organization at UIndy, through Roche and through community, has kind of refocused what it was looking at. From a financial standpoint, that helps with our retention. So our retention for African American students has gone up 17% in 2 years, in part because they're connecting to aspirations, they're connecting to opportunities, they see that up the possibilities before them. It's gone up for all students by 6%, which are numbers that if you're in higher ed, you don't see that too often. It also has helped with recruiting. So at a time when there are fewer high school students coming out, traditional age students coming out and going to college, 5 years ago we had 800 freshmen. Just this August, we welcomed 1,252. And so those are great problems for institutions to have. But they come when you think about how to redesign your program and your product versus how do you budget cut yourself to greatness. And when you look around, St. Joseph's closed a couple of years ago, is now coming through a rebirth with Marion. But they got into this conversation about how do we cut and cut and cut, and then you're in a downward spiral. The genius of this is not just that each of our institutions will change, but that the regional economic security of Marion County or Indianapolis is going to grow and be tremendous. When you look at the 128 corridor in Boston or the triangle down in North Carolina, or if you look out in California in some places or in the Houston area, you see these kind of relationships as being critical to the success of not just the institution, but the community. And I woke up yesterday and Good Morning America touted Pittsburgh, Indianapolis, and St. Louis is the three great places now to start business. And if you look at those places, they've got institutions of higher education that are equal partners with the corporations trying to figure out how to make that occur. And our faculty, I learned two things from Brian over 6 years here. One is that life is more comfortable without a tie.
And the, I obviously haven't learned that yet.
Yeah. And the second is that you've got to get your people on board and then step away. And so I like to view myself a little like Santa Claus. I'm a large man in a suit that takes credit for other people's work on Christmas. But our faculty have gotten excited by becoming relevant in a time when they need to be relevant. And that's because the questions are asked by and put together by Ascend.
And go ahead.
One of the things that we did recently, just a few months ago, was we actually brought our leadership teams of people into a room and they could hear our vision. Mm-hmm. And that really opened our team's minds as to, oh, wow, this is bigger than just community. There is some commonality here. Yeah. And there's also just some real, not only partnership, but friendship and understanding we did this to be successful. This isn't something we're just going to try because there's real students involved here and we have real workforce needs. And so we've got to solve them. But that them having us talk in front of a group of people was very helpful to our team.
And Rob sort of previewed our next question. I just want to have two quick comments to President Emanuel's remarks here. But first, the comment around faculty. So I think, you know, the faculty from UND, when we went into the Roche partnership, like, could not have been more thrilled and excited about being on campus at Roche, taking apart their machines, being able to tinker with them, see them. I mean, they were craving that kind of interaction. And that benefit that the faculty got by being a part of this is going to extend to all students, not just to the students who are going to be a part of that academy. The second thing that I thought was fantastic here is the most recent Gallup report does point out that students who have work-based learning or internships are significantly more likely to graduate college when they to take advantage of those opportunities, and all of these programs are creating those hands-on practical experiences for students. But sort of your last comment there was really around how these programs are much bigger than students and education and sort of individual employers. There's really a much larger sort of goal and aspiration here. And I think, Rob, you got a chance to speak a little bit to that. And Brian, you were mentioning a little bit. But is there anything else that you think it's helpful to share about why these partnerships are so valuable for the overall community that we live in?
Well, this is an indirect answer, but I'm going to use this opportunity to talk about something that's pretty cool. So when we talk about having scholarships, those scholarships are coming through our foundation because people are giving to our foundation to support a student. Yeah. I would have never, ever understood that. Yeah. So maybe that is indirectly helping the community, but you have people, and we're in a very philanthropic area, but people also want to see the impact of the funds that they donate. And to see this and put a name and a face on it, even if they never know the person personally, that's very powerful. And that's something that I think will continue to allow us to scale this and support it and have it be financially sustainable. Because, I mean, just to say that we can take this out of our operating budget every year, that's just not possible. Mm-hmm. But this, again, opens up another door, another opportunity, and who knows what's behind that.
That's cool. For me, I guess maybe a couple of things come to mind is from a Roche lens standpoint, as we really, and I believe we'll get, this is a unique workforce model that does not exist broadly in the U.S. And I believe we're doing something extremely unique here. And I think as we continue to have success at communities and at Roche's, again, looking at it from a Roche standpoint, we have 93,000 employees, and Indy's one of the biggest sites for us, but we have sites everywhere, and we're always looking at making strategic decisions on, hey, where do we put the 50 jobs that we need for this new venture that we're going into, or, you know, we're going into digital diagnostics, and we need to start building capabilities around IT, and we've got to hire 50 jobs. Do we keep hiring them in Silicon Valley where it's competitive and it's costly and yada, 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 or do we look at it in Indianapolis? And as we continue from a community standpoint, that's going to have obviously tremendous impact on the community as we continue to grow jobs. I think maybe the other thing more on the personal side is, you know, as we look at, you know, we've got our youngest now are twins, and I just did last week, we just did the first college visits for them. They're juniors in high school. And it struck me as we were going to the two college visits, I had to fill out their applications before we went on these visits. And it was like, I'm like, hey, Nate, so I got to put down, what are you interested in? I have no clue, Dad. I'm like, great. Nick, what are you interested in? I have no clue, Dad. I'm like, great. I put psychology down for both of them. Have no idea why. So then we show up at these two last, it was just last weekend, last Friday, we show up at these two universities, and I'm like thinking, you know, inadequate parents here because I haven't given my kids enough direction to know what they want to do in life as juniors in high school. And so they're with the first campus, they're with 10 kids, and 9 out of 10 had no clue what they wanted to do before we went on the tour when they were asked. And we went to the next university, 9 out of 10 had no clue what they wanted to do. So long story short, back to the community piece, to me this is another example to where I really see it as like if we can really capture the minds of our kids as they enter into college and they really don't have any clue what they do, but if we can expose them to like how does your interest in chemistry and biology actually translate to something? I don't want to be inside a laboratory. I don't want to be a tech in a lab, but I love the science, but I'm a people person. I'm good with my hands. And to expose our kids to these opportunities, I think from a community standpoint, is just tremendous. And I think, too, from a attraction standpoint, as we look at, you know, Mitch Daniels talks about the brain gang, you know, bringing talent to Indianapolis. I do believe that we're going to have kids from Minnesota and from California and Florida that are looking at UIndy because they're like, wow, they've got these programs. You know, look at this, Roche Academy and, you know, Community Health Network. I can get a job and get it paid for, et cetera.
I would only add that if you go back to the 70s when Luger and Hudnut were thinking about Unigov and Gypsy, and Indianapolis was built on these kind of partnerships between companies and politicians. And ever since then, we kind of moved away into this zero-sum game where you could either be a winner or a loser. If you didn't get something, then you were losing and not being there. And if you look at the vibrant places around really the world, that's not the mentality. And so for our region, what this does is, I hope, breeds confidence in the fact that we can be and instead of or, that we can continue to figure out how to take the best of things that make quality of life really good in Indianapolis and apply it to how you make new people who are going to come out and be in part of your voting crew and your citizens and in your community. And you can see that happening. So we serve about 45% first-generation college students. We'll take about 70% of our students come from Indiana, but about 88% of them live here when we're done. And so we're a net importer of talent into the space. We spend $48 million a year on goods and services. We have 6,000 students. We employ 1,500 people. That's not the 93,000. But we, and Butler's bigger than we are, we are big gorillas in this game. And if we relegate ourselves to simply thinking that we can teach people and put them out into the world, we lose the opportunity to take what we're potentially really good at and bring it into a way that develops a community into something that we started back in the 70s.
Yeah, these are just incredible thoughts from leaders in our city who are, you can clearly tell, are not just thinking about how to solve their own needs, which they are. That is a part of this, but they're really thinking about how do they be a part of something bigger. And I think that's really the idea behind Ascend as well, is thinking about, you know, certainly how do we solve direct challenges that our workforce and our economy face, but then how do we be a part of something bigger to really make Indiana the place where people want to live, play, and work. And so with that, we do want to give a chance here for our audience to get to weigh in with our panel. So I'd like to open it up to the audience to see what questions you have for our panelists. And it looks like we've got a mic that can float around back there.
So I've worked with a pharmaceutical company in university and developed programs a much smaller scale. But nevertheless, one of the challenges is that universities succeed, or at least classically, when they can do the same thing over and over and over again. Companies succeed, as was mentioned, when they're agile, when they're quickly able to change whatever need of the marketplace occurs. That creates a problem that university needs to, in this model, the universities need to be able to change their processes to adapt to that agile environment. On the other hand, companies need to provide meaningful experiences, not just, you know, a test case. Place the students in real product development. That is meaningful experience, and that is how you promote the process to the students. So how does the, my question is, how do the industry respond? How, in the other questions to the academic, how does the university respond to this?
The university response is pretty simple, at least at UND, and I was at Georgetown and NYU before. Each of those locations used their processes to connect. They didn't change them. So, and I think if we change them, then you start chasing the shiny object and taking yourself off base from your mission and your and the traditions. And that's when you get into trouble about creating things that might be really successful in the short term and then kill you in the long term. So shared governance, the process of curricular change, the faculty role in deciding what's critical to the direction of the university, those three things sound like weird animals to the corporation, but they're critical to the success of a university. My job was simply to find a way to use those processes in a timeline that met the need of the question being asked by the corporations. And when we asked the faculty and we honored those processes, the response was terrific. Our biology faculty went through a departmental, a school, a faculty senate, and a faculty vote on a change of class structure to be able to accommodate that course you just mentioned that we needed. The nursing faculty do the same thing. The moment that you start saying, at least in higher education, and you probably know this, that as a president I'm going to make this happen is the moment it dies, right? It's got to get into the structures that make the university great to begin with. And again, that respect on the part of the corporations, in this case, Roshan Community, is what allowed that to happen. It was energizing to our faculty to own both the processes that they own in our shared governance relationship and feel the consequence of time because it was all benefiting the students. And so it was really a pretty warm bath as we went through it.
And the other thing I would add is, yeah, I totally, again, as I've mentioned a couple times today, you know, the ability to have an agile workforce and to move and fail fast in that is so key. But in this program, yeah, I mean, I don't see us like really tapping in and changing UND's, you know, program. I mean, we have to graduate. I mean, Rob's mission is he has to graduate these kids. I mean, that's success for him. I mean, they have to get a 4-year degree and they have to graduate. And so they can't graduate if every semester Roche is trying to change the curriculum. But where it's really cool, and I think this opportunity is just awesome, but we're going to be engaged. We're going to know these kids. I mean, they're going to be on our campus. They're going to be in like very focused internships that are very related to what they're learning. It's not like they're going to be off on an internship that's not related. So the agility, when I think about the agility, it comes from Roche, and it comes from the experiences that they're getting as they go out and travel with experienced field service engineers. They're inside in Roche on Hag Road working on instruments and, you know, those kind of things. And that's, to me, is where this formula of success is really cool. It's really a great opportunity.
So my response is, let's talk about the pharmacy academy, because what you're talking about is you're producing pharmacists, and my understanding of where pharmacists work in our organization is totally different today than it was not too many years ago. So we have more pharmacists in non-hospital settings by far than in hospital settings. We have pharmacists that are in direct patient interaction, trying to help patients at discharge or physician's office, et cetera, totally different. We have pharmacists involved in our data analytics trying to make sure we understand the doses of opioids that we're distributing. And for instance, you know, we've cut our opioid prescriptions by over 500,000 scripts in the last 12 months. That's just one little organization. And pharmacists are involved in all that. And then you get into the precision genomics and you understand you relate it all there. I'm just saying, and so I'm talking like I know what a pharmacist does. I don't. I can barely spell it. But I'm telling you what you have. You've got an industry changing in the partnership with academia on understanding what we need and the type of pharmacists and their skills outside of just what's happening. There's a whole plethora of opportunity that other people actually might want to be a pharmacist because what they're doing, and we can do things to grow together. And I don't think this is at all limited to the community. I don't think this is, you know, some secret sauce that we have. So if we were doing this, we were saying we believe based on age and, you know, turnover and everything else, that we think we're going to need this pool for the next several years. But you can go to the other places in Central Indiana as well. All of a sudden, to me, there's a partnership. And it's a living partnership. We'll continue to learn as this evolves. And won't get to the point where all of a sudden what's being produced isn't meeting our need. And we get back to the fact that we put caps on new grads, which is still the – I can't think of a nice thing to say about that, but that was not a good idea. But fortunately, that happened because that's what spurred this whole thing. It made no business sense to put a cap on new grads and hire temps at three times the cost.
Hi, Chris Bedero, Eli Lilly and Company, recently retired and former PhD recruiter for Lilly. So the traditional prevalent model for moving students in the workforce for decades have been through career service offices. And this is tried and true. You know, tens of thousands of students have found their jobs through career service offices. So I'm just curious, if you think about maybe Ascend 2.0 or 3.0, when we're really trying to fill that 50,000 person gap of skilled labor in Central Indiana, if there's some synergy between what you guys are doing and career services offices. I mean, it's not just the big universities, right? It's not just Notre Dame and Purdue and IU. Yeah. Dozens of liberal arts colleges around Indiana have students that are dying to get into the workforce. And it's the Mariah problem that you had, right? You know, I've got a great degree. I have a grade point of 3.9. I have no idea where to go and find a job. So I'm wondering whether there's a synergy there and just your thoughts about that.
There's a huge amount of synergy. I'm going to let Jason speak a little bit about sort of the big network of Ascend and how we're thinking about that.
Yeah. So I think this is a really good point. You know, when we first started, Stephanie and I read a bunch of labor market reports. Like, I'd get up at 4 in the morning and read a labor market report. And then we built a steering committee that included business and education that evolved into the plan for Ascend. And we came out to this very simple set of priorities, the other side of a very complex problem. And those priorities were understand what employers need, identify and connect talent. When there's not enough supply being created, we have to find a mechanism to build more supply. And then we need to take the information that we learn and feed that back into public policy, which we haven't talked about today, but we've been very involved in things like India Achieves, making community college, IUPUI tuition-free for low-income students. We've been very involved through the creation of a licensed clinical social worker pathway with addressing some of the public policy issues related to workforce and opioid addiction. But the network, which is really the mechanism by which we say, what is happening in the demand side? So for employers like Lilly that have the ability to have a team of recruiters that can go out and interface for career with career service offices, or companies like Roche or Community that command that kind of scale, that's a different problem than the problem, say, for mid-sized companies or small companies that may not have that arm to reach out to higher education institutions. And then the same thing is true on the higher education side. For the business school that Stephanie went through, or for the engineering department at Purdue, there is deep connection between business and career service offices. But if you go to maybe Earlham or Hanover, how does that university and institution interface meaningfully with employers? And so the technology and the network and the incredible team of people at Ascend build a mechanism that serves as an intermediary, but the technology enables scale over time. We can profile companies and profile those jobs and interface with those employers and then interface with the career service offices and achieve a scale that really hasn't occurred anywhere in the United States, to my knowledge, today. And so I'm excited about the panel we have had today, but I'm excited for the panel that we will have in the future with folks like Corey from Career Services and the ProEdge Center and folks from the Career Service Office at Butler, where we're talking about we've been placing thousands and thousands and thousands of students into Indiana companies and growing our economy with the most talented people we possibly can that are being produced by the incredible higher education institutions we have.
It's also changing our model. So we shook pretty hard the career services tree over the last 4 years, turned it into a social capital generator instead of a resume writing center. And so the molecule that is in that stained glass window at Lilly, when you were going to the main center there, which talks about kind of the Lilly success strategy, is actually the motivation for our individual strategy to get our students to create their own molecules when they come to campus now, starting as early as freshman year. What experiences do you have? What internship opportunities do you have? Who are you meeting in our alumni base? What does your world start to look like at the molecular level, and then how do you make those connections? That's very different than waiting for senior year to write your resume and get that out. And for institutions that aren't necessarily the first on the list for Wall Street firms to come knocking on when they're doing their Midwest recruitment tour, we have to find a better way to expose them to the talent and the social capital that we've created, and that's done through the Professional Edge Center that Corey loves. And now that there's a kind of a place for us to plop those students, we're able to do that. It's changed us so much that we're about to sign a deal that would connect all of our data to Ascend and allow them to take those molecules, that information from those molecules, and spread them through their network. And so that has rocked the career services world at UIndy.
Blake Neubauer, Tycos Laboratories. I have a question about your model, because it appears to me, hearing it, that you guys are applying an apprentice program, but at a more technologically, educationally advanced level than what's done, say, in Europe at the secondary school level. Have you all looked at those kinds of programs and taken learning points that might be applied in your enterprise, and how might you plan what you're doing now and for the future, and how that's integrated across the spectrum of, say, apprenticeships in heavy manufacturing to the perhaps more technologically advanced careers that you have discussed?
So we are part of a larger industry. Really vibrant economic regions have multiple types of universities that provide multiple types of people out into multiple types of jobs. For us, I reject the notion that apprenticeship alone is a good enough experience to get you to be successful short and long term. And so that was part of the conversation we had with Roche and Community was, we can produce these people for you. I know you know what you need, but we also know what they need, and we need to be in that conversation so that we're producing people that we're proud of as alums and you're proud of as employers. And so, as oftentimes wins the game, it's the and solution that does the best. And so our students and our parents, who are paying $48,000 a year to come to us, were saying, where's the real-world experience? Where's the connection to this industry? I do not want my kid coming back home after they graduate and living in my basement. How do we get them out? English 101 is great, but...
Neutral goal. Yeah.
And so rather than say this is either some kind of vocational path to move to Roche or it's a liberal arts path, we've branded ourselves as a comprehensive liberal arts institution, which is both and instead of either or.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more, Rob. I mean, as we think about this program... To me, it's about we're building the pipeline of future leaders for Roche, leaders in all areas of support, but commercial education. These are individuals that are going to be part of their career, they're going to be going global and working in Switzerland and Germany and things like that. And will every one of them do that? Probably, absolutely not. But what we're building is something completely different than what an apprenticeship program will be. Not that that's not bad either, by the way, too, because, you know, I think there's definitely a place for that too, but this program is not that. This program is bigger than that. It's, I think of an apprenticeship program as we're going to teach you to be really good at this, and our partnership is much bigger than that.
Hi, I'm Yanni Pandelidis from Ecogenesis 11. I had a similar issue with my children coming in and looking for colleges, and I said, what do you want to do? I don't know. Mm-hmm. And I think had the same feeling of inadequacy as a parent for that. But it did occur to me at the time that I wish that there was an actual course in high school and maybe at the university to actually teach people about what the alternatives are, not at the end of the career services and then start preparing you at the end. But at the beginning, when it's saying they just don't know, the kids did not know what the possibilities, the idea that there was something called a medical diagnosis laboratory technician was totally out of their thing. They do know about nursing and lawyer and doctor. That's it. Mm-hmm. And they don't know what they don't know. Mm-hmm. And I wish that there would be some kind of an outreach program, both at the high school and the university program, that would actually teach them from the beginning, perhaps as a course for that.
It's a great idea.
I'd like to have
that's a great idea.
That is the exact argument for not commodifying higher education. You can go and learn English and history, but unless you have the opportunity to kind of be in community with people and understand and network and find your social capital, you have no aspirational development. You have no horizon setting, and this does it. Will Dershowitz is one of the students we were talking about earlier who took an early internship, came and wanted to go to med school because that was what was expected, interned with Roche, and now has this whole world in front of him. Really wants to go to Switzerland and travel and become part of the Roche community. He came back and he said to me, you know, I've got now these opportunities that make me part of a global citizenry instead of Marion County direct. And that's a result of that. The same thing happens with medicine. And hopefully we're preparing these people to take that first job, but then also to move up and in to different places in that area. And that's what the Professional Edge Center does at our university. I know it's happening, starting to change around the country.
The other side benefit when you were asking that question that I thought of too is, Stephanie mentioned it. I mean, we're the teachers from UIndy, they're like engaged in the program so clearly, but they're like actually getting exposed to what Roche does and how what they teach. So I teach chemistry, I teach biology 101, I do this, and they're actually, I mean, in the middle of like really experiencing, you know, okay, who is the customer? What is the solution? What are the challenges? And I don't know. I never thought of it until you asked the question. But I think in some way that's going to also broaden the view of the teacher, okay, to give them a broader base to add value to coaching the students on where to go and what to do.
And it's also, to me, talks about the kind of the genius of doing this through Ascend. Because before this all happened, we were doing it on our own. That would not have had any scale to it, and it wouldn't have worked. But all of a sudden, you get this, and as you add companies and you add careers to that, I think you do get to a place where all of a sudden you can start, and people can have a better idea at an earlier age of what this really means. Because even when you say something like nurse, there's a stereotype, mm-hmm. and all I'm saying is that stereotype's not accurate, mm-hmm. and that stereotype's either good or bad. But the issue is, as you get into what this is all about, I think this provides that platform that we can do that within Central Indiana, at least, or all of Indiana.
Yeah, Jason, do you just want to add something to that real quick?
I think the other piece of this, and I talked about our role in public policy, but this is clearly a problem, and the state's working to address this by, you know, using software, things like Career Navigator. But the reality is, you know, if you look at school counseling in Indiana, there's one counselor for every 648 students. And that person is expected to do testing, emotional counseling, and academic counseling and career counseling, and the system is strained. But one of the things that comes through these types of processes is information that can be fed back into the public policy arena, where the governor and the state and the legislature are working to tackle this very issue right now. So I would say that there's an awareness of this problem, and there are folks that are working to try to address it.
My name is Mickey Levitan. I did HR work with some big companies in a prior life. Brian, earlier you mentioned this kind of side effect that some people were willing to give money to the foundation to support scholarships for students going through this program. And then you mused about whether or not you could afford to fund a program like this at scale. My bet is that if you got your HR and your finance people together and really analyze the cost of hiring, the cost of lost productivity, the cost of turnover, that you could actually fund these kind of programs all day long. I'm interested in your thoughts on that.
I mean, we have done that. So if you take the number and you say, what's the cost of us having an open nursing position? And you're just looking at that in its little cylinder, it's the number the industry says $90,000 a year, okay? So on that, I agree. However, if I said, okay, I'm gonna take half my workforce and I'm gonna get that workforce into something like this as well, you double count a lot of those numbers in doing that, because there's a lot of overhead on that and everything else. And so my point is, this has got to be bigger than just nursing or just a few things. And with that, we can find business reasons for doing it. But my point for making the other, and I may not have made it very well, was that there's also another source of people who want to be involved in seeing people be successful and happy, and which we never thought of. And as our foundation gets involved with donors saying, what are you doing? It's really amazing. We have this huge investment in school partnerships. You know, on any given day, we're providing school nurses to almost 200,000 kids. And we do that on our payroll. We did that for a totally different reason I wouldn't get into. But the number one thing, or one of the number one things that anybody who wants to provide philanthropy dollars to us, they would say, and direct it back to that school nursing program, that's really cool. So it's just when you start doing things that people say, that's good, you know, that's really good, that's a win-win for everybody, then there's people that said, I'd like to bet on that. So that was really the point I was trying to make.
Yeah. And I think in our last just couple minutes here, just want to give our panel sort of a chance to give one final thought to the group. So you have a mixture of people in our audience from industry, from higher education. You have some a group from Ascend here as well. But what final advice would you give to either employers who are thinking about doing this work or other partners, higher education, as they think about getting involved? Any final thoughts for the group?
I'll start. My thought is this: that I have responsibilities to run an organization, and so my whole point is that I've got to be willing to be vulnerable. I've got to be willing to listen to other ideas. I got to be vulnerable to have people tell me what are some of the real issues that we have, and then be open-minded enough to say, let's go try to fix this. Mm-hmm. But the key to it all is I can't let the walls of our organization limit our creativity and innovation. And whether those are universities or those are other businesses or those are just new ideas that people have that they're trying to do, we've got to get people engaged. We now have this innovation center where we bring all kinds of people in, and we're doing things that I would have never thought possible. And most of them are trying to improve the health. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of us are trying to make sure that when somebody leaves our doors, they're not sicker than when they came in, for all kinds of things there. So there's all kinds of things that happen when you're willing to be open-minded, vulnerable, and not believe that you've got to be the smartest person in the room, because as soon as you realize, like I did early on, that I'm not, then a lot of good things can happen.
That's well said. Well said. I guess just from my side, you know, when I lay awake at night, I think about
the healthcare market, our customers, and how we take care of our customers and how we grow our business. I think about innovation, because we are an innovation company, and how are we changing the practice of medicine through innovation. And then the third thing I think about, usually first before those two, are the people, because none of it happens. You could have the best innovation in the world. You could have the best widget in the world, but if you don't have the people, it's going to go nowhere. And when I think about the people, it's about you've got to attract talent, and you've got to have a culture that's a thriving culture where people want to be there. They love to be there. It is a family. And you've got to have leaders. You've got to have a leadership team that's driving and developing the people. And so when I think about Ascend and this opportunity, it is completely inadequate for us to keep doing things the same way. And you evolve or die. And I do believe on that third bucket of people, if we don't embrace and learn how to do things differently and take risk, we are going to be left behind relative to talent.
It says zero on the clock, so I'm going to tell you about Ronald Burt, a sociologist from Chicago, because that'll take me 45 minutes to get through. The thing that has guided our work at the university is this concept of structural holes. So you have societies and groups that have really good, very deep development companies, but progress and innovation comes from the people that sit above those holes and take the best from them and create new. And that's what we're doing here. And I think that's what you have to continue the development of the whole. So you have to continue doing what you're really good at. Mm-hmm. But in order not to die, you've got to also think between those holes. And what I love most about Ascend is that it's allowing us to think between those holes. And what I love about the community in Indianapolis is it's kind of in our DNA to do that, and that we can do this a lot better and quicker than most other regional areas. And I'm looking forward to seeing not just this develop, but Ascend develop and see what that does for the quality of life for all of us inside of Marion County.
That's a good word. Can we give our panelists a big round of applause for their time today? So I say this to my team all the time, but I feel like at Ascend, we're just so fortunate to get to work alongside such amazing leaders like you have up here, but also to do the work that we do every day. So you have some information about Ascend on your seat, or check out ascendindiana.com. Jason and I will also be around afterwards if anybody has any questions and you want to learn more. So now I'll turn it back over to Lori Leroy to close out our session.
Great. Thanks so much again to our speakers and to Jason and Stephanie and Alyssa and Raquel for putting this great session together. I think it was really inspiring to see how we're working together a lot differently. And again, sort of across CICP initiatives is pretty exciting. So thanks again. Also was just thinking how appropriate it is. I mean, we've been doing these at Butler for the last year or so, which has been a wonderful partnership. But then again, just how appropriate it is that we're having this discussion today here on campus. It's pretty cool. So again, thank you to our sponsors, Miles Printing, Indy Science Connect, and again, Butler. And our next frameworks is going to be November 13th, and it is going to be on the topic of how policy in D.C. is affecting innovation within our life sciences community here in Indiana. And we've got some great speakers coming for that one. And then we'll have a final one for the end of the year in December at the Regan Streef Institute. So we're kind of in event season right now, but have a lot of really exciting things coming up. Enjoy your Friday. Enjoy your weekend. And thanks again for coming.